Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Hey, welcome back everybody. No guest today, just me, as I answer more of your questions from those of you who've joined the Triathlon Coach Cafe recently. Now, I don't know if you saw the Facebook post I did recently. There was a video, it was about 10 minutes long, and it was about me being concerned with reading some posts of people who were in the middle of training for events or in between training for big events and feeling run down with a loss of mojo, little niggles, etc., etc. There's also been a fair amount of posts from people who have races coming up and who have niggles or injuries and are worried about how they approach their training in the final few weeks, what they should be doing, should they carry on, etc., etc. So today's show is going to be all about overtraining or under recovery, about how to avoid injuries and what to do when you get injured, because these are inevitable parts of being an endurance athlete. So let's start with questions about overtraining or under recovery. So this was a question from Gary White, who said, is it true that you can't overtrain, just under recover? Stu Dillingham and Ian Arneson wanted to know, how do I identify when I'm overtraining? And Simon Hazel asked about how you strike the balance between training, overtraining, and avoiding injuries. So let's define these couple of concepts first. What is overtraining? Now, there will be some scientists and physiologists and maybe even coaches like myself who wonder whether there is any such thing as overtraining. If you want to improve your fitness for any sport, you have to push. You have to do a little bit more than you've done before, subject your body to a little bit more stress. And that means you have to overtrain or overreach. You have to train over what you've done on the previous week or in the previous block. So we're all seeking this fitness, and in some way we have to make things harder for the body. So that can mean doing more training up to a point where you reach the limit of what you can do each week. For most of us, due to our life constraints of work and family, sleep, etc. Or you go a bit harder, but there's a limit to how much hard training you can put into the week before you just stop responding. Or you can add more frequency. Even though the volume might stay the same, training more frequently will add a different stress to the body. You can change the type of training that you do. So instead of, for instance, in the pool doing all freestyle training, you might do some medley work. And that will be hard because probably as triathletes, you're not very competent at it. So doing a 3K session of backstroke, breaststroke and fly will be much more demanding than doing a 3K session of freestyle. So you can change the type of training you do. So it's frequency, intensity, time and type are the four manipulations you can generally make for a training to become harder. And over time, you want to do that, and that's the way your body responds and you get fitter. Okay, that's overtraining. You may also go on a training camp. Let's say you go off to Lanzarote in the spring or to Mallorca, and because you're on holiday and you don't have to worry about the normal stresses and strains from everyday life, instead of your normal 10 hours of training, you can fit in 20 hours of training. And actually, you manage that quite well because you're in a stress-free environment. You can go to sleep earlier. You can sleep in a bit later. You're not having to worry about constant emails and demands of work. And maybe you've left the children at home. So we can all cope with a greater volume and probably intensity of training for short periods of time. The problems start to occur when that extra training we've added in also has life added to it. So we mustn't forget, even if you're a full-time athlete, you mustn't forget that stressors are cumulative. So training is a stress on the body, creates a fight or flight response from the sympathetic nervous system. Equally, having a tough deadline to meet at work is a stress and creates a fight or flight response. Being worried about Brexit is a stress. Travelling, whether you commute long distances in the UK or whether you get involved in lots of long-haul, short-haul flying, is a stress. Changing your diet is a stress. Fixing up everything for the birth of your first child or to get married is a stress on your life. And all of these stressors, including training, go into the same bucket. So if at the same time as you're doing lots of training, you have a tough deadline to meet at work, or you're commuting a lot, or one of your children isn't well, etc., etc., then stress is increased. And that's what stops you from responding to the training. And actually, it also stops you from recovering, because while you've got all these fight or flight responses going on, the chances are you're producing more adrenaline, more cortisol, and that will probably lead to you having disrupted sleep patterns, feeling like you're, if you remember that Stressed Eric character that used to be on the TV that had got a great big vein on the side of his neck that was always pulsing, you feel like you're always switched on and there's no recovery. There's no parasympathetic involvement where you rest and digest and relax properly. And that's a symptom of modern day life, that we're always on top of it instead of just switching off. And as triathletes and type A people, we're probably worse than anyone, because we're always feeling guilty if we've got some empty space in our life and filling it with something rather than putting our feet up and reading a book or just having a power nap. So overtraining probably doesn't exist because we're always trying to just push on a little bit. Under recovery very definitely does exist. And if you wondered whether you're under recovering, then here are some things that you might want to see if you can identify with. Your workouts seem more like work than training, so they become a chore. My goal as a coach and as an athlete is to enjoy every single one of my training sessions and to look forward to going to them. But if you ever get up in the morning and you don't really look forward to going to the pool, or you come home from work and the thought of sitting in your chair is more exciting than going for a run, then that probably means that training is more like work than training. Okay, it's more of a chore. That might be an indicator. Lack of motivation to train or desire to train is something that Kelly Starrett talks about, and is something that we might want to use as a powerful tool to deciding if we train, and if we do, how hard we train. Next up, you're training hard, but each week you feel like you're getting less fit. You become slower in your sessions. It's hard to replicate that real peak performance. Chances are you've plateaued and you're declining. There's a reason for this. Your body's not absorbing the training, and actually doing that much training is a waste of time, and you probably need to back off a little bit. You may find that you've got soreness all the time. Your legs ache when they shouldn't. An easy run or an easy bike ride leads to sore quads when you wouldn't normally expect that. This is called DOMS, delayed onset of muscle soreness. And what's happening is that your inflammation levels are high because certain hormones are not doing the job. And again, it's a symptom of the overactive sympathetic system. So again, an indicator that you might need to back off. How about this? Ever had that where your friends or family ask what's wrong? You know, you look a little bit more fatigued than normal. You've got those bags under your eyes. You just look a little more listless. You're turning down invitations to go out for dinner or to the pub. And when you do, you're constantly yawning. Yeah, these are people that know you very well. They're outside observers. And because they're outside observers, they often have a good insight into how you respond and what your normal behaviour is like. And when they see changes in behaviour, they ask you if everything's okay. Number five, you don't sleep very well. So you can't get to sleep. Firstly, it takes you much longer. It's called sleep latency. And for somebody like me, it takes me 2 or 3 minutes to get to sleep. But I know that when I've been training too hard, or if I've done training sessions in the evening and my body's still sort of on go mode rather than on relaxed mode, it often takes me a lot longer to get to sleep. Equally, if I've had a couple of drinks a bit later on in the night, a couple of glasses of wine more than I normally do, the alcohol inhibits me getting to sleep. And when I do get to sleep, the alcohol doesn't allow me to get deep, restful sleep. Even though you feel like you're asleep, you're not actually getting the best sleep. So too much training, a little bit more cortisol and adrenaline going through the system. Feels like you've been drinking coffee late on in the evening. You don't get to sleep, or you do get to sleep, but then you wake up frequently, you toss and turn. So these are called sleep disturbances, and a lot of the sleep apps now measure this. You will find you're not getting restful sleep, and therefore you're not recovering from training. And so you start the next day a little less recovered than normal. But if you carry on with your normal training load, eventually you're in that downward spiral. Resting heart rate is higher or lower than normal. That's a strange one there. If you know that your resting heart rate is 50 and it's 60 when you wake up, that's almost, again, like having that caffeine in your system. It's the adrenaline and the cortisol. It's in your system. You're in go mode. That might be one sign. Alternatively, if you've got a drop in resting heart rate, now, sometimes that can be due to better fitness, but if it's something that's coinciding with lots of training, then that might be an indication that you're overdoing it. You might also find that when you're doing some training sessions where your heart rate would normally be at a certain level and it's not, that could be because your heart rate's suppressed and you haven't recovered. If you take the option every day to measure your heart rate variability, then you might find that your little heart rate variability app is telling you that you need to recover. This is something that I'm encouraging all of my athletes that I work with to measure on a more frequent basis, hopefully every day, because then you build up a pattern. So heart rate variability is disturbed, really, and on a less positive way. So there are seven symptoms there. Now, it's possible that you might get one or two of those from time to time. Workouts seem more like work than training. You're sore all the time. If you're getting several of those, I would be saying you really need to take a look, not just at dropping your training, but also what's happening in the rest of your life. So Stuart and Ian, those are the signs. And the biggest one of those that a lot of people look at is this motivation to train. If you really are not motivated and you don't get straight out of your suit when you get home from work, or your work clothes and get straight into your training kit, or you don't jump out of bed and get straight on with your swim kit and off to the pool, take a look at what's going on. And Simon Hazel then, striking the balance between training and overtraining. Because I would say that it's really difficult. You plan a training work schedule for next week, but nobody knows really, even you as the person that's doing it or me as your coach, nobody really knows how your life's going to pan out in terms of stress. I can plan a training program that has a certain amount of stress built in, and you can do that training. And as I said earlier about going on a training camp, in 1 week, you'll be able to manage that training perfectly well. And in another week, you won't, because other stuff that's come into play is having an effect on it. So even for those coaches who write programs 4 weeks in advance, and I know there are some people say, you shouldn't do that because things change. You can't even predict what's going to happen tomorrow, never mind next week. So all you can do is put a schedule down. Now, the important part about this is once you have that schedule, it's incumbent on the athlete to then make adjustments as they go along. So if your program says there's a hard ride today, but you wake up in the morning feeling a bit rubbish, having had a restless night with your legs still sore and feeling like you have no motivation to train, then the worst thing you can do is carry on with that program as it's written down. The best thing you can do is understand that training is rest is also part of training, and therefore taking a day off and resting is equally as valuable for your future fitness as training today. Or if you do decide to do the session, then instead of doing a hard session, do a very gentle session. That'll promote some blood flow. It'll help a bit of recovery. And you may find that that's enough. Okay. So then it's incumbent upon the athlete to manipulate the training based on what they see in front of them. This is called recovery on demand. And it means that rather than planning in your recovery, you actually do it dependent on how your training is working out and how your life is working out. Now, there's a link between all of this and injuries, because one of the things I didn't mention there about signs of under recovery, although we did touch on it in terms of being sore all the time, is that you tend to get little niggles building up. if you're doing too much training and not recovering, you can get inflammation in the muscles, which is a good thing in small doses, but not if it's a permanent sign. And that inflammation doesn't just happen to the muscles. It also happens to the connective tissue, the ligaments and tendons. And if they're inflamed, or the muscles and fascia and fibers around them is inflamed, then it's going to cause some soreness, and that's going to inhibit your training, particularly with running. It's possible to swim and cycle with a little bit of discomfort, but running, particularly if it's a problem with you below the knee, then it's almost impossible to run with anything like that. So again, listening to your body and responding to the signals from your body is the best thing you can do to avoid injuries, Simon Hazel. Okay, so having identified overtraining and under recovery and talked about the signs and symptoms that you need to be on top of, one thing you can do is to keep daily metrics every day. So if you use Training Peaks, they've just introduced this new function and feature which allows you to provide subjective feedback either for yourself or for your coach. So when you've recorded a session and you've put all the hard data in about how fast you went and how far you went and, you know, how hard you went, you can actually click on these little emojis that indicate how you felt, from a happy smiling face, which indicates a strong, feeling strong, to a sort of like a fairly downbeat face, which is indicating that you're weak and underperformed. And underneath that, then you can also move the little button on the sliding bar to indicate your perceived exertion. So for instance, you might have had a perceived exertion of 9 but feel very strong. Equally, you might have had a perceived exertion that's moderate, a 5 to 6, but actually felt weak. So too many of those on consecutive days should also be indicating to you that you're overdoing it. Now, if you're self-coached, what this means is that just the act of doing those should raise some flags if they're constantly coming out as being under par. If you have a coach and your coach is keeping tabs on your training, then I would expect that your coach would be stepping in to make some sort of suggestion as to the intensity of training. So listening to your body, thinking about it mindfully every day, understanding that rest is just as important as training and just as valuable a part of the training process to help you get fitter, is also important. I could say at this point that you might want to look at your nutrition. If you're eating too many processed carbohydrates, this can add to the inflammation. So you might want to look at your diet. If you're one of these people that thinks that because they do lots of training that they deserve a piece of cake or something, then you know, the chances are that you're wrong there. You do not, just because you deserve it doesn't mean you should be eating it, at least not on a regular basis. And you might want to think about that. If you're eating lots of processed carbs in the form of pizza and pasta, again, have a think about that. If you're drinking lots of alcohol, you know, 2 to 3 pints a night, you might want to think about those as well. And particularly if you're seeing these symptoms of under recovery. So nutrition, rest, recovery and training all go into the mix. It's not all about the training. So let's focus on injuries for a little bit, because one of the biggest contributory factors to improving performance is consistency of training. And the two things that really interrupt your consistency, well, actually there are three, but the two that are really frustrating are injury and illness. Illness comes from compromised immune system, and an illness can result from all of those as a result of not paying heed to all of those things I mentioned before with under recovery syndrome. And so can injury. You get the inflammation, you get the chronic overuse, but there are also some impact injuries that come from being tired. So for instance, if you fall over while you're out running, sometimes that can be just because you're not picking your feet up, and that can be because the central nervous system is tired from too much training. Equally, when you're tired and fatigued, you often don't pay as much attention as you do when you're on top of things. Imagine this when you're riding your bike, you're in a group of people, something's happening in a fluid group as you're moving around, but you don't respond quick enough, you touch wheels and you go down, and then you've dislocated your shoulder, or you've broken your wrist, or you've broken your collarbone. You might think that you were unlucky, but it's equally possible that your injury and your accident could have been avoided if you'd been paying more attention. So just have a think about that as well, and how some of those unlucky, and I say that in inverted commas, those unlucky injuries could be self-contributory. Most of the time, triathlon injuries are chronic overuse injuries. And most triathlon injuries, probably 70 to 80%, are related to running and are below the knee. Now, I did do a podcast right at the very beginning of this podcast series with Alison Rose, where we talked about how to avoid injuries. And I will put a link to that in the show notes at the end, so you can go back and listen to that one, because that's really interesting. Alison Rose is a physio who's worked with Olympians in many different sports. I'm trying to think of the name of our heptathlete that won. Jessica Ennis-Hill was, Alison was her personal physio. She's also worked with the high-performance triathletes in Leeds, including Alistair Brownlee and Vicky Holland and Non Stanford and Johnny Brownlee, etc., and Jess Learmonth. So Alison, very, very experienced athlete in her own right, and super experienced and physio at the very highest level. So go and listen to that, because that will give you some clues on avoiding injury as well. And though Eric van der Veyer and Stuart Payne, you will find that there are some things in there that you can do to strengthen your Achilles and recommendations to resolve plantar fasciitis. So the first thing you can do to avoid injury or reduce the potential for injury is plan your training appropriately. The three elements that Alison Rose identified as causing injuries are doing too much training, poor technique, lack of strength. So firstly, find a training program that's appropriate for you. If you're running a marathon and you suddenly decide to up the ante and start doing 5 hours of running a week when you've only been doing a couple in the weeks before, then you're more than doubling your workload. And even the most perfect biomechanic specimen would struggle to take on that overload with all the impact. So it's extremely possible that an injury is on its way. So make sure your training is appropriate for your current fitness level, for your goals, for your current strength. Lack of technique. This is most prevalent for swimming and running, which are what we call open chain activities, where the body isn't connected to anything permanently. If you think about a closed chain activity, the feet and the hands and the butt are connected to various parts of the bike, and so you're in a fixed position. When you're swimming and when you're running, it's a bit more freestyle, and so what happens there is that you can move around a lot more freely, if that makes sense. So the hands, for instance, that are doing the stroke get to move around within the water. That means that you can put more pressure on the shoulder. Equally, when you're running, the feet float around in the air, then they're free to land as they like on the ground. So if you haven't got good strength or good mobility, they can land in a way that's going to lead to injury, if that makes sense. So technique is really, really important. Not only does it help prevent injuries or reduce the potential for injuries, it also helps you to become more efficient with the energy you have. And that's important for triathletes at any distance, but especially those of you doing long distance triathlon. So what we want to do first is to spend an awful lot of time improving our technique. There's an awful lot of stuff that you can do to improve technique with swimming and running. But the first thing is to identify what your technique is currently. So you'd want to be videoed. You would want to have somebody who is an expert at assessing where your technique is falling apart and identify those flaws, and then find some drills that are going to correct those specific flaws, and then keep working on them and repeat that. Equally, you would probably want to have a top-to-toe physiotherapy assessment. I've mentioned this before. And if you want to know more about this, then go to the podcast with Louisa Edmondson. Now, we did two. One was about a bike fit and a top-to-toe physical assessment and how that identifies just flaws and tightnesses and weak spots in your physiology, and how you might fix those to improve your performance. And the other one is how to use the elements of the bike fit to make you more efficient on the bike. Okay, so the links to those podcasts will be there below. But having that top-to-toe assessment from the physio is the first start in identifying what other things you need to do to improve your mobility or your strength in order to change technique and make yourself more resilient to injury. The next thing is strength. If you're not strong enough around certain body parts, then at a certain point, those muscles will get tired and fatigued. Other muscles will have to kick in to help during that activity, and those weak muscles will be under a lot of strain, and eventually they will stop working effectively. and then that may lead to injury also. So, for instance, let's take the calf. Alison Rose and her team feel that in order to run a 10K effectively, you need to be able to do 3x25 single leg calf raises with both a straight leg and a bent knee. Okay, so straight leg, it works the gastrocnemius, bent knee emphasizes the soleus. So if you can't do that, what it means is that when you are doing your running, the calf muscles aren't strong enough to create and maintain good technique throughout the 10-kilometer run. And therefore, those muscles will fail at some point and other muscles and tendons and ligaments will have to kick in to help, at which point they get stressed more, which may be the reason why people get Achilles tendon injuries. Now, there are other things that might be at play there. It might be that the glutes aren't working properly or that certain muscles are overactive. But the point being that once you've identified where these weaknesses are, you can then start a strength and conditioning program, which will help to make you more resilient. So that's Eric van der Weijer. As well as testing your calf strength, you would want to look at your hip strength and your glutes and everything else to find out if they're working properly. And then start a specific strength training program 2 to 3 times a week aimed at improving your resilience. So strength and conditioning is something I'll talk about in another podcast. But for now, a very specific low level, probably a body weight program that helps to strengthen up those typical injury spots in triathletes. Going back to the soleus, you will use the soleus muscle very heavily when you're cycling. Remember, the legs are very, very rarely straight, apart from perhaps when you're climbing sometimes. So in a time trial position, your knee will always be bent and therefore the soleus is stressed more. And so that's going to pre-fatigue it if you're getting off the bike to run. So 3x25 per leg, bent and straight knee is probably a starter, not a target, for those of you wanting to get going on those calf raises. So minimizing injuries for Bryce van der Post, John Gibbons, Bren Whelan, for all of you guys, the key to achieving this is to have the appropriate training, is to make sure that you have good technique and you focus a lot on technique and not just going hard, and that you have appropriate strength in those muscles to be able to perform the movements correctly for the amount of time. Now, if you think about that for somebody doing Ironman, you're going to be on your feet running for 3 to 5 hours, perhaps. You might be on your bike for between 4.5 to 8 hours. So those muscles need to be strong enough to perform those repeated actions for that amount of time. Larry Dooley, also, you asked about keeping up the motivation to complete the tons of work associated with full Ironman training. So hopefully I've given you an insight there into how to keep the motivation, is just don't overdo it. You know, you lose your motivation when you lose the fun. So maintain the fun and you'll stay motivated. Listen to your body and respond accordingly, and then take the appropriate action so that you back off before things go too bad. Because if you do get injured, chances are you're going to have to back off the training anyway. All right, Simon Reynolds also asked, how do I stay injury free? Well, I've given you that one. Race harder and get faster. If you want to get faster, you need to be training consistently. So it's imperative that you stay injury free. I think there's a general conception, a perception amongst triathletes that in order to go faster, you need to train hard. And that's true, but you have to choose your moments. So, for instance, trying to train hard on a day when you don't feel like it is probably not going to do any good. Your body's not primed to accept the hard work. A bit like having a bucket full of water. If you try to pour more water into it, the water will just flow over the top and be wasted. So if your body's not ready to accept more training in the same way that a full bucket's not ready to accept more water, then the training will be wasted. I don't understand why you would want to train at a time when your body's not ready to accept more work. The best thing on that day would either be to rest or train easy so that you can help the body to restore, ready to be able to accept that training the next day or the next week. So you have to think about recovery and training as well. I also think that in general, most endurance athletes do not understand the concept of training easy and training hard. And when I say training hard, I'm talking about very, very hard. And when I'm saying easy, I mean training so easy you think you feel guilty for not doing much training or not going hard enough. And so what happens then is when it's too easy, we push on and make it a little bit harder so that we satisfy that sort of thing for having a high heart rate and feeling out of breath and sweating a bit. And when it's too hard, we back off because we think we're going to get injured. And we have to get used to training at the extremes, which is called polarized training, something I've chatted about extensively on my blogs over the last year, and something which I'll do so again in another podcast. But for now, try and keep out of that middle zone. Do the stuff that's going to make you fast, really hard stuff. And then the easy work, below about 70% of effort, will satisfy all of the boxes that you need to tick in order to develop endurance properties effectively. So there's no need to train any harder than that. And go hard on days when you feel like going hard, rather than on days when you don't feel like it, okay? Because then you'll get more out of it. Hopefully I've covered that now. Overtraining, under recovery, how to know when you're in either, and how to avoid when you're in either by being mindful about what's happening in the rest of your life and what your body's telling you. Some other strategies it can use to avoid getting injured or ill. And finally, what happens when you do get injured? So let's say you have had an Achilles injury, because that's something that's common amongst triathletes and runners. It stopped you running. It may have stopped you cycling as well, but it's definitely stopped you running. So if you're able to cycle and swim, the chances are that your aerobic fitness hasn't been dented in the slightest by not running. And if it has, it'll be minimal, because you're still working the heart and lungs. It doesn't matter what mode of activity you choose to do. The heart and lungs are still getting a good workout every day. QED, the engine is fine. But if you haven't been running, the body hasn't been used to that impact, and particularly the Achilles tendon, which has been injured, has been rehabilitated. So when you're coming back, the advice is to be very, very gentle. The most likely point of your next injury is the place where you last had one. So if you've just recovered from Achilles injury, then the most likely injury you're going to get next is an Achilles injury. Starting back, just run gently. And I would highly recommend that when you've got a problem like this, you see a physiotherapist. If your physio is good and understands the demands and requirements and the mindset of endurance athletes, they will give you a training protocol to work to that will help you get back to training effectively and without a recurrence of your problem. But you must listen to that. Please don't try to second guess the medical profession. As a coach, I always step aside for their opinion. I do not try to pretend that I know better than somebody who's at the top of their profession, because I don't. I can advise and I can talk about what athletes might need to do. But when Alison Rose or Louisa says to me, we need to start like this, then I listen. So please don't go on Facebook for an alternative opinion. You'll always find one from somebody who said, yeah, I did this and it was okay. But that was their particular situation and they probably just got away with it. And it doesn't mean they'll always get away with it. So if you've got physio advice, follow it to the letter. And if it appears to be too much, then step back. Otherwise, it'll just end in tears and you'll get injured again. So that's how you come back from injury. Nice and easy, slow progression. It might be for somebody returning to running after a few weeks out of just running 5 times 60 seconds, nice and easy on the grass, with a minute's recovery in between. And if you're okay the next day, then the next session 2 days later, not the next day, but 2 days later, would be 8 times 60 seconds. And then 12 times 60 seconds until you can do 15 minutes. And then you might lift it up to 6 times 2 minutes. So it might take you 8 to 10 sessions before you're back to running fully for 30 to 40 minutes. Be patient. It's a long game. Catherine Duran-Roney asked me, if you're feeling a niggle while training, how do you know when to stop versus pushing on? So this is really difficult. Generally, if you feel some pain, this is my opinion, if you feel pain which doesn't go away, so sometimes you can get a pain around your Achilles which might be nerve related and it might ease itself out as you run along. So if you have a pain that doesn't go away and actually gets worse while you're training, I would think that should be a good sign that you need to stop at that point. If you don't experience anything during training, but when your body's cooled down and maybe the inflammation has had time to kick in and you're struggling to move around comfortably the next day or later on that day, that would be an indication that there's something wrong. If after, I mean, and you can do your stretching and your mobilization, that might fix it, in which case, carry on. But if the problem comes back again in your next session, then there clearly is an issue and you'd want to go and visit the physio and find out if it's just might just be an imbalance that's causing you to overuse that muscle. But if you wake up the next morning and you've still got a pain, then again, I would listen and I would pack in that training session and make an appointment to see the physio. If you've got a pain in the middle of the muscle, so let's say I get some tightness in my hamstring, you'll have to make a judgment call. If it's just tightness, you could probably carry on. I would probably carry on cycling, but if I was running and I had some tightness in my hamstring, I'd probably stop. If I was swimming and I had some tightness in my shoulder, I might carry on until it got to the point where it was getting worse, and then I would stop. In general, a niggle is not right, and at some point it's probably going to become an issue, and therefore I would just be listening to it, making a judgment call, and probably thinking about how you can back off or stop your training. There's no doubt that if you carry on with a niggle, eventually it will become a pain and eventually it will become a showstopper. And Andy Brindle said advice on coming back from injury but not coming back too hard. So I think I just covered that one, Andy. Follow a graded progressive training program approved or written by your physio. Follow that advice. Be mindful of what your body's telling you and just listen and play the long game. Okay, don't be impatient with this. And if it means missing a race to let your body sort itself out, then sometimes that's what you have to do, because you're not a professional athlete, and you know it will cloud your enjoyment of life, not just training, if you've got pains everywhere. So that's it. Hopefully I've answered a lot of stuff there. Training and working out is supposed to be fun. I love working out. I'm just about to go out on my bike now. The sun's shining, the rain's gone away, and I'm just going to have a nice ride around in the countryside for 90 minutes. I really look forward to that. The day when I don't look forward to it is the day when I think that there's something wrong with my training or with my life in general. Normally my life in general, because it means I'm too busy and then I have to, and I'm not getting enough sleep. And so then I have to look at altering that so I can enjoy my training again. But if I wasn't feeling up for it right now, I would probably just go and switch the TV on and watch a program and have something to eat. Because it's lunchtime when I'm recording this, not just because I comfort eat. If I've got an injury, I go to see the physio straight away. But what I do to keep on top of that is strength and conditioning 3 times a week, a short program, but consistent. I do my mobilizations every day and I see the physio for 1 hour every week to make sure that I am now managing my body. I am now no longer recovering from injury. What I'm doing now is making sure that I don't get any more. On a daily basis, I record my daily metrics. I listen to what my body's saying and I adjust my training if necessary, according to what my body's telling me. And I do use heart rate variability, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how to stay on top of this. But remember, it's a movable, fluid situation and things change. So the best thing you could do is be prepared to change with them. Understand that one session will not have a massive effect on your fitness in a positive way, but it might have a massive effect on your fitness in a negative way if it makes things worse. Enjoy what you're doing, have fun, and I'm pretty certain that you'll make progress. If you ignore all of that stuff and just bash on regardless, then I'm pretty certain you're going to hit a roadblock. Okay, it's over to you guys now, because ultimately you're driving the car. I'm just giving you the advice. So that's it. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week with another guest. We're on our 52nd podcast next week, which means we're coming up to our first anniversary. So thanks to everybody that's been listening, that's helped to grow the download figures. We've got loads more great stuff coming. I'm going to be around for a long time, so hope you are too. See you next week. Bye-bye. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon, 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.